You're listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
The date is the 14th of November 2022. I'm Heather Hilton.
And I'm Larissa Bickerton.
We are two sisters, 20 months apart in age. And I would say most people would describe us as being joined at the hip. Would you agree?
Definitely. Too much so.
Okay. So the reason we're doing this podcast is, in my mind, to keep a diary of what journey we are about to embark on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so this is going to be the hardest bit, I think, is to kind of backtrack maybe a few weeks, because although it feels like this has just happened in my mind because of when I received the news, this is something that you've been going through for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me what's happened.
Okay, so I went on holiday to Malta with my husband's family, and on the second day after we arrived, I was just lying on the bed and found what I thought was a lump in my right breast, but couldn't be sure because I have quite ropey breast tissue.
That's a really nice way to describe them.
Yeah, I said that in the hospital last week.
I'm quite lumpy anyway.
I'm quite roopy. And the guy said, actually, I disagree. But anyway, I've quite ropey fibrous breast. So I wasn't sure whether it was a lump or it wasn't a lump. But throughout the course of the week and in various stages of terror, I reassessed it, refelt it. And yeah, it definitely did feel like something that wasn't meant to be there. So I got back from my holiday, and on the Monday that I got back, I made an appointment to see my GP and went in to see her straight away, basically.
Okay. What happened in the appointment?
She was lovely. She examined me, did a quick feel around the area, and actually was quite reassuring, to be honest. She said that it felt cyst-like, which made me feel a sense of relief, but knowing my personality type, which is very significantly in the control department.
You said that, not me.
I wasn't prepared to rest on my laurels and think, okay, brilliant, that's it, sorted.
Okay, I think it's probably important to mention your age. Now, I do love mentioning your age because clearly you are older than me.
But not everyone thinks that though, do they?
Well, it depends who you speak to. It depends on what time of day you look at us as well.
We have also been asked who is the oldest, haven't we, Hannah?
Only occasionally. But I think it's important to know our age because we're in that age band, aren't we?
We are in the age band, although I think I'm very young to have found a lump. But that doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't listen to what you find. I'm 46.
So definitely closer to 50,
wow,
are you now?
You're really going there. I'm 46. Okay. Still 46. 46 until March next year.
Yeah.
And you've just turned 45.
Okay, only very recently. Happy birthday, Heather. Thanks for that news on my birthday. But anyway, we'll Ta-da! Talk about that in a second.
Anyway, so to go back to the GP, she said it felt cyst-like but couldn't be sure and wanted to refer me anyway to the breast clinic in Derby. So she put me on the urgent pathway, which is a two-week wait. The NHS are brilliant at getting you through as fast as possible. So got me an appointment for Wednesday the 9th of November.
So that brings us to kind of last week.
Yeah, the week that we're...
I suppose we're in the week.
I suppose I still feel like we're in the week since last Wednesday because it's less than 7 days from there.
Yeah, so we're on the Monday the 14th, but you went to the hospital last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday, so. Yeah. I mean,
at this point then, who knows about the lump?
Just me and my husband.
Yeah, okay.
Primarily because at this point, there was no real need to mention it to anybody because having spoken to the GP who had said that she thought, in her professional opinion, it was cyst-like, I was really of the belief that actually there was every chance it would be a cyst and I would never have to worry anybody. It was only going to be me and Andrew that would have the sleepless nights until we knew.
Yeah, and I guess I know that your temptation would probably have been to tell me initially, but...
It was, it absolutely was, and I really wanted to, but the guilt was huge at the time. I didn't want to worry anybody unnecessarily So
did you feel like, because I've spoken to friends who have gone through what you're now going through, who have said, I genuinely didn't think, I thought it doesn't have, it's not going to be
me. Absolutely. I totally thought it isn't going to be me. I couldn't believe that I'd even found a lump. Mm. I just couldn't believe that bit. So that, it feels like I've been walking around in a state of shock for nearly 3 weeks now. In fact, it will be just 3 weeks and one day since I found this lump. And it's still shocking to me that my body has done this to me. I can't quite believe it's happening. And I know that it happens to so many people, but I still can't quite believe it's happening to me.
So what happened at the hospital then?
So the hospital were amazing. The first thing that they did was take me in for a mammogram, which I'd never had that done before.
Now, that's supposed to be painful.
Well, it depends what your version of pain is. I mean, I think I'm quite hardcore. Don't forget I'm the girl that does 4 pull-ups and thinks that that's really, you know, a fabulous thing to be doing at 46. I love
and
the
it
challenge.
It is
I love
actually
the challenge.
Fabulous.
But they said it would be potentially painful, but it wasn't. It was just marginally or mildly uncomfortable.
Can I just ask that, you know, was it a male or a female doctor who said potentially it would be painful?
Well, yeah, I see where you've gone with that. Yeah, exactly. On whose scale? Yeah. But no, it was a lady that did the mammogram, and she did it. It all happened very quickly. Did both sides, both breasts. Didn't say anything one way or the other, but then wheeled me through to the next part, which was to see the ultrasound specialist, a really fabulous professor called Professor Evans. And he started doing the ultrasound scan, and we were chatting all the way through. And I think very quickly he got the measure of me, because as soon as he finished the ultrasound scan, he looked me straight in the eye and said, do you want me to be honest with you?
Wow, that's refreshing, isn't it?
It was fantastic.
For someone like you, that's refreshing.
It was absolutely what I needed. If he had been any other way, my faith in him would have immediately disappeared, and I wouldn't really have felt confident. So I said yes straight away, and he said, in my opinion, there is a 90% chance that this is cancer. And if this comes back as not cancer, we will be asking them to retest it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
Okay, so
I'm lying there with my boobs out on the table, covered in gel.
Look, you've been in worse positions in front of other people, so I'm not too concerned by that. But
it was so funny because I was really trying so hard to be very casual about the fact that I'm half naked receiving news that I'm now cancerous. I mean, it was really bizarre. It was probably the most surreal thing I've ever experienced.
And was Andrew with you at the time?
No, he wasn't with me at this point because men aren't allowed to come through to the testing area because a lot of the women are walking around with just dressing gowns on.
Yeah.
Because we've all got to get our, want of a better word, get our breasts out.
Oh, knockers out.
Get your tits out for the lads. Yeah, absolutely. So no, I was on my own, but that didn't really matter. I felt that he said the right thing to me.
At the right time.
He got the measure of me. He was brilliant. Then I said to him, have you checked the other breast? And he said, yeah, we've done the mammogram on both and it's not in the other breast. He also said, it doesn't seem to be in your lymph nodes either. We can't see any sign of it spreading. And then I said, can I have a look? Yeah, I wanted to see.
That's like people who want to look at things that have been removed from their bodies.
Like that. I like things like that. For me,
I bet you're the type that, when you've had a colposcopy and they ask
the camera.
You if
totally.
You want to see.
Yeah, I like the camera angle. I want to see what's happening. And I think he must have got that about me anyway. So we walked over to a different screen and he showed me the mammogram and he said, obviously on here, you can see this area. This is the cancer. It's 1.6 centimetres. So it's smaller than average.
Because I think the gauge is like a 2. If it's under 2 centimetres, that is
small.
Positive.
It's a really positive sign. And he also said as well that it was over 2 centimetres away from my nipple. So whatever the course of action that followed, and it would include surgery and chemo, he thought, he felt relatively confident that they might be able to save my nipple. But to be honest with you,
I know what your initial thought was. Do you know, I've got to say this because the amount of people that I've had this conversation with, was your initial thought, I don't care, I'm not vain, just take everything, I don't need the nipple. I don't need my boobs.
It's exactly that. And it's so true because you think that. And then all of a sudden you think, Hold on, let's stop being dramatic a second. Just wind it back a bit. All of a sudden you're like, take whatever you need. But I don't really think we mean that. So if they can get away with taking as little as possible, that's definitely better.
Yeah.
But, you know, given the choice between dying or having your tits taken off.
Yeah.
Get off with the tits.
Yeah, basically. I don't know any woman that wouldn't say that.
Absolutely. But he was fabulous. And I saw him later on, actually, after I then went in to see the consultant. So I'll take you to the consultant next, because chronologically that makes more sense. And I'll bring you back to where we ended up with him. So the next thing was, we went to see the lady consultant. Can't even remember her name, but she was also lovely. And she did a physical examination of both breasts and again concluded that she couldn't feel it in my lymph nodes. So Andrew came in at this point and then we sat chatting and she said, look, at the end of the day, this is going to be cancer. I'm pretty sure it is.
Do you know what? That really surprises me. I mean, obviously when they know, then they know, but I never imagined that that's how they would
tell you.
Address it, yeah.
I don't think they do that with everybody. Right. I hope not, because that wouldn't be appropriate for people. Some people, some women I know would find that completely abhorrent.
Yeah.
For me, if they had been any other way other than direct and straight to the point, I would struggle to have faith and confidence in them. And, you know, don't forget, they are reading people all day, every day. They're in the people business, science and people. And they must know, just by talking to you, what type of person you are and whether you want that level of honesty, I suppose.
Mm.
So that's what they did with me, and I was grateful for that, definitely. She didn't really know anything. At this point, it's all speculative. So we went back to see Professor Evans, and I was on my own again with him whilst they took two biopsies. They're called core biopsies, from within the actual tumour. So that was a really strange experience and quite uncomfortable, actually, I have to say. But the nurse that was with me, this really great nurse called Angela, she basically told me that she had just had just finished her own treatment for cancer.
Wow.
And she said to me, look, you are in exactly the same place that I was in March this year. And bearing in mind, this was only beginning of November. She'd done really well. She was back at work. Her hair had started to regrow. She'd got gorgeous cropped grey hair. And she just said, look, you're in the best place. These guys are amazing. You know, just have faith. But it was at that point, after he had done the biopsies, that he said to me, try not to worry. Don't Google anything. Try not to worry. Don't Google anything.
Hold on a second. Let me just go.
You didn't know me that well.
Let's just rewind just a couple of weeks. In fact, a week or so. Had you Googled when you were on holiday when you found the lump or not?
No. And do you know why?
Oh, I do. You do didn't have data, yes. Did you? Well, I just thought that was an excuse for not keeping in contact with us on holiday.
So the O2 gods were at play whilst I was on holiday for some random reason. My data wasn't working and I couldn't log onto the Wi-Fi in the villa for anything longer than 2 or 3 minutes. And we were with our entire family, so I didn't want to spend hours focusing on Dr. Google when I was trying to pretend that it wasn't actually happening in the first place. So it was lucky that there was no data, I honestly think, because when I was told it was cancer, of course, I did come home and start looking at Google. But let me just take you back a second to what he then said to me as we were saying goodbye. He said to me, try not to Google, try not to panic. From what I can see, this absolutely does not look like a death sentence.
Did he use those words?
He actually used those words. And I actually could have cried and kissed him with tongs in that moment. And I said
Was he hot?
No, not at all hot. And I said as much. I said, oh my God, I could kiss you. But don't worry, I won't, because he looked a bit panic-stricken as I was standing there in my jeans, boots and dressing gown, telling this poor guy that I could kiss him. I said, don't worry, I'm not going to do that. I clearly did not kiss.
No, good. I'm really glad you didn't.
That's making me blush thinking about it. Did not kiss the professor. So, yeah, at that point, we then just sort of regrouped outside. We were told that we would get the results of the biopsy.
That's a pretty big thing to say, isn't it? I don't think it's a death sentence. I mean, yeah, that's huge to leave someone with that. In positive and great.
It is. It is. And but again, yet again, because I had had the it feels cyst-like from the GP, I know he is the expert, and he really did see it, the cancer, in all its glory. He did the ultrasound and the biopsy. I know that I can potentially have more faith in him, but still, the terror that ensued for the rest of that day and the following day was unlike anything I've ever experienced, because I was so, and am still so, fearful that this particular tumour in my breast is going to be a type of rare cancer called triple negative. And I know women that have died from this particular type of cancer, and it usually affects younger women. So women...
Wait, so when you say younger... Sorry to bring it all back to age again. Okay. So where are you in the category?
Younger, thank you very much. I am younger. So anybody sub 50 is younger. Okay.
But you have hit menopause early, as have I.
Yes.
And therefore it always makes me think, am I in my body older than my ages?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am I am perimenopausal. I am on HRT. I'm on estrogen, progesterone via the Marina coil, and testosterone. And just before we go any further,
any other owns you want
any
to be
owns,
on?
Yeah. Well, I'm now not on any owns apart from progesterone, because I can't get the coil out of my body myself.
Yes, of course, yeah.
But I immediately stopped taking my HRT because I don't know whether it is going to be estrogen receptive or not. So I thought, actually, best just stop everything.
Did they tell you to do that?
They didn't, but I did tell my GP that I'd stopped taking everything, and she went, that's fine, just stay where you are until we know more about it. So when I get the results, that will be a question that I can ask. Because whilst this is a secondary worry, I do know that most women are, if they aren't menopausal already, they are plunged very deeply into the menopause as a consequence of the treatment, some of the treatments they receive for breast cancer.
Okay.
So
that takes us then really to the day before you told me.
Well, actually,
and Mum.
I got the results of, yes, it's cancer, on the Wednesday, and I came around to see you both within an hour and a half.
Yes.
Yes, it was on the day.
Oh, of course it was, because I saw you on the Tuesday and you were awfully clingy, and it was very strange because usually I'm the clingy one. But I have been off with a chest infection off work.
I'm going to say luckily.
Oh, yeah, I felt lucky at the time. But I was really quite hacky and not very nice,
horrible.
And steroids and antibiotics. And I remember you speaking to me that morning saying, how are you? And I said, oh, I feel dreadful. And you went, oh, yippee, are you off school?
Yes, that is.
I'll come up and see you. And I thought, oh, God, you know, I feel ill and I just want to kind of lie and collapse, but secretly thinking, oh, that would be lovely. It'd be nice to have the company.
Yeah, and whenever do I sack off my normal day-to-day jobs?
Your exact words were, I'll clear my schedule.
Yeah.
Because you're so important. You have this wonderful schedule. You are important. But yes, the schedule got cleared and I kind of thought, oh, maybe it's just because we haven't seen each other for a week, which is usually the longest time that we don't see each other for. But
the longest time.
But we'd both been on holiday, hadn't we?
Yes, we had.
So you came round. And with mother, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the previous day, if you remember, I'd engineered a situation whereby the three of us would be together tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I did think there was something fishy going on there.
That was the reason was so that we could watch The Crown together, if you remember. So I said, I'll pick you up, Mum, on my way back from the hospital from my inverted commas smear test.
Ah, that's it.
And then we'll come round to see you, Heather. So the plan remained the same, really. And because I didn't want to tell either of you without you having some support there, because I knew what the fallout potentially would be.
So that moment you walked in the door then, I was kind of on what I at the time thought was my deathbed, over dramatic, not much, with my chest infection.
That's not your deathbed.
And you walked in, you got dropped off by Andrew, which was a bit odd because I was thinking, why is Andrew there? And I said, I've just got to pop upstairs to do something. And you said, no, can you just wait for a second?
Yes, because I could have let you come up here to clean the mould off your shower, which was the actual job.
Thanks for that. I wasn't really going to go there.
You're so welcome. But I just thought, no, I can't wait any longer. I need to tell you now. So I probably rather inarticulately said something along the lines of, I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, but I have been diagnosed with breast cancer this morning. And I don't know what it is yet, but that is where we are at.
Yeah.
I felt incredibly tearful at that moment.
You didn't cry, though, right at that moment?
No.
And neither did I.
No. You were remarkable
in that
minute.
I flicked a switch
in that
moment.
It was amazing.
No, it was bizarre. It was bizarre because that's the news that is the news you never want to hear, yeah. Isn't it? And so for me, I had to just quickly go, nope.
But you were brilliant.
Nope. It's not your time. And I think that's what I did immediately. And because Mum was sat there.
Yes.
And I thought she's going to be a hot mess in approximately 30 seconds, but wasn't. But did look like a deer that a car was hurtling towards at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that shocked me, looking at her face and then looking back at yours and then thinking, what do we actually say now? What do we do?
Well, what actually happened then was I felt better. I felt terrible. I felt incredibly guilty. But I felt better because you immediately picked up the mantle of control and authority. And you just assumed this air of, I know what I'm doing and it is going to be okay. It really reassured me.
Oh, well, that's good. And I don't think I did that consciously, although I'll take that.
Take it.
I think it was more self-protection mode that I went into.
Yeah.
Because when Dad died,
yeah,
I was launched into trauma,
yeah,
and didn't know how to handle it. This felt on a skate, it
practiced.
Felt, yeah, I kind of almost went, oh,
thank you,
God.
Dad.
Yeah. But yeah, I think self-preservation is more why I automatically switched that switch, because I thought I can't go down that path right now because that's not how to handle this. And obviously I didn't want to burst into tears, but then why do we always say, don't cry, it's okay. Because there is a time for crying, isn't there? And I find that really hard.
Heather, there are so many times for crying. And if that had been the emotion that had come to you in that moment, that would have been completely understandable. But the way you handled it for me was just fantastic. It gave me the confidence to let some of my emotion go, knowing that you were there to pick up those pieces of me. It was so wonderful to feel held. That's how I felt.
Well, that's good. I'm really pleased about that. Maybe somewhere in me, I knew that's what
possibly
was needed.
It really was.
I don't know. It's bizarre, isn't it? You can never really. It's not like you sit there of a night time going, I wonder what I'll say if she comes around tomorrow and says this. I mean, it's not. You don't go to that place, do you? You try not to.
Not very often, but I do sometimes think to myself, if I was held captive and tortured, would I be able to survive X, Y, Z?
Oh, yeah, I do that. I'll do all that sort of weird stuff that's never going to happen.
You don't know
but that. Oh, come on.
Don't know that.
I go to the weird places that aren't going to happen, but I try not to go to the places that are, that potentially could.
Yes.
But yeah, it was just a real, I felt like we were living in a parallel universe for a little while.
Yeah, it's been the most awful, bizarre, surreal few days. I got a call today, as you know, to tell me that tomorrow morning I'm to go into the hospital at 9 a.m. to get the results of my biopsy. So at that point, I will know exactly what we are dealing with. But I have to say, last week on Wednesday and Thursday, which I've rechristened day one and day two, were utterly, utterly horrific. And I just did not know how to function. I couldn't breathe. I was terrified. I didn't know the meaning of the word terror until I was faced with this reality. And I think not knowing the full extent of my reality has been torturous. I feel a lot better today. I felt a lot better on day three onwards. And that's because although the doctor told me not to go anywhere near Google, I decided to go near social media, and I found a really fabulous woman called Helen Addis, who runs an Instagram account called The Titty Gritty. And she,
like it.
I know, there's so many brilliantly brave women out there. She is a survivor of the triple negative.
So the one that you were,
the one that I'm dreading.
Okay.
That I'm still dreading.
Yeah, of course.
It still could be that.
Yeah.
She is a survivor of that. She was interviewing on her own Instagram Live a lady called Lauren, who had just been involved with the trial of a new drug that I can't pronounce, but I think it is pronounced pembrolizumab. It's available on the NHS, so you don't need to go privately for it, but it's widely available for women that have been diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, which is notoriously very difficult to contain because it is incredibly aggressive, and it doesn't react well, apparently, to the treatment, or doesn't react at all to some of the more common treatments for breast cancer. So finding her gave me hope. And then I started thinking as I woke up on... Oh, sorry, I went to the gym on Thursday morning. Did I mention that?
No, that was so weird because...
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Because just for a bit of context, you're a very healthy...
clearly not.
...elderly lady.
Wow.
You've got a banging body, got to say. You are fit and healthy.
Yeah.
You don't drink, you don't smoke. And you have just embarked recently on a new gym regime with my husband. And
my
your
husband.
So everyone apart from me, but that's fine. I'll stay home early morning and just look after my six-year-old twins while you're all happy at the gym. But no, I know that it's actually been tough but brilliant, and you've loved it. So you are super, super healthy, and you go 5 times a week at the minute. Mm-hmm. So your natural instinct was, I'm at the gym tomorrow. Now, I did kind of wonder, what the hell is she saying? She's actually just had mini surgery in your boob, and you've got this bandage on, and you know there's blood seeping through it. Mm. And you did say, I'm going to go to the gym because I want everything to be normal.
Yeah, with hindsight, that was probably a mistake.
Not a good idea to be bench pressing when you just had breast surgery.
Yeah, I think it's because I kept thinking, well, on a scale of what's to come, this is nothing.
So of course you could have chopped your hand off that day and it'd be like, don't worry about the hand.
Yeah,
I'm dealing with breast cancer.
Hey, that is honestly how I felt. So I got up on Thursday at 5 a.m. with my husband, and off we trotted to the gym, got back, walked the dogs.
But weren't you a bit concerned as to why you didn't get the happy endorphins?
I didn't get any happy
Really?
Oh my God, it was the worst thing I could have ever done. If anybody's listening to this that is considering going to the gym the day after your diagnosis, don't bother. It was horrendous.
Yeah,
I felt like crying the whole way through.
Okay.
I mean, all joking aside, it was utterly dreadful.
But that's where I should have stepped in and gone, you're not going to the gym. That's ridiculous.
We were all in shock.
We were
all in shock.
Yeah.
But anyway, I decided on Thursday evening not to go to the gym on Friday morning. I decided that I was going to sleep to get some sleep, because I really thought that that's what I was missing, was perspective, and that sleep would help me with that perspective. So I downed a load of Night Nurse, which knocked me out, which was fantastic.
Didn't I recommend the Night Nurse? Because I'd been on it for my chest infection.
Downed a load of Night Nurse, woke up, and then found these Instagram accounts, which made me feel that there was hope.
Because that was when you called me and said, I feel really good today. And these are the reasons.
Yes.
Do you feel that when we started speaking about doing this diary, that's kind of what gave you a bit of inspiration?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I, in that Friday morning, within the space of an hour, I'd found it's not a podcast, it was an Instagram Live. I'd found that, realised that there were drugs now available. So women that had died 9 or 10 years ago with triple negative potentially weren't dying now in the same numbers as they were. So there was definitely hope. I also had a really good sort of reality check whilst lying in bed, covered in dogs. I have a black lab and a cavalier, as you know, covered in dogs and cats. I had a good reality check about how I was going to be as we moved through this in order to retain some sanity, because the void at that moment felt huge. It was like a black cavern. I felt so isolated and as if I'd stepped off the edge of a cliff.
And you were free falling.
I was free falling. Yeah. It was awful. And I couldn't control how I felt about it, which was terrifying to me.
You do like to be in control of your feelings and everything, don't you?
So for me, in that moment, I decided that actually I was going to go through this journey with purpose. I wasn't just going to get through. I wasn't just going to rock up for chemo and then get through the...
I'm going to have to give a little bit of context to what you're talking about here, because people will get to know you, but I'm going to bring up the bedroom situation.
I don't know what you mean.
You don't know what I mean. Okay, so you've got...
I don't know what you mean.
You've got a lovely house.
Yeah.
And it's not a conventional house. You live in an old converted church.
Yes, that's correct.
Hashtag Georgian
chapel. Hashtag the Georgian chapel.
Right, yeah. Okay. So your bedrooms are downstairs.
Correct.
And then there's a wrought iron spiral staircase that takes you to the... massive open plan living area upstairs. Okay, so your bedrooms downstairs are nice and large, high ceilings, two at the front,
two at the back.
Okay. Now, can you describe to me your thought process when starting to create the moment that you need to vomit and poo and do all those awful things after you've had chemotherapy and the illness that would, you know, come from that?
Yeah. So in this moment on Friday morning, it was only 1 hour it took me to get to all of these very logical conclusions. I decided that I wasn't just going to get through this. I was going to live purposefully and happily through this in as much comfort as I could muster. So
I think comfort's the word that is key there for you at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I, in that moment, had rearranged in my head the whole of the downstairs. So I'd swapped both spare beds over and around so that I got the comfiest bed in the nicest room with the best bathroom that I could quietly shit myself and vomit away in after chemotherapy without too much inconvenience for anybody else. I, at this point, had already started searching for big comfy armchairs that I could buy to fit in the bedroom. I mean, I really went to town on how this entire scenario was going to play out.
You played it out in your mind and how you wanted it to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
On that day, I showered and started wearing all of my best underwear. So this is day three.
Can I just tell you what my idea of my best underwear is? The M&S t-shirt bra that I've recently bought, pack of three, because all other bras had either got holes in, had gone chewing gum grey. You're talking Agent Provocateur.
Okay. Like tangerine-coloured pink spots all over it. I literally got all my best underwear out and thought, I'm totally wearing this whilst I've got breasts to fit in it and I'm going to enjoy it.
And whilst your body is looking so
very
good.
Hot. I'm so annoyed about this.
We talked about that though, didn't we? The fact that you're going, I cannot believe I've got my body to where I want it to be. Yes. I feel great. I feel healthy. Yeah. I feel lean.
I love my hair.
I love my hair at the minute. You've just had it coloured and it does look super. And now all of a sudden...
It will all be gone.
Yeah.
And again, back to the original point of, take it, take both breasts, take all my hair. We all mean that.
Yes,
but actually, I don't really want to lose my hair. I don't really want to lose both my breasts, but that is a very real possibility. And whilst I'm making all these wonderful plans about buying lovely armchairs for people to sit in and read to me and as I'm convalescing, you know, the reality is that these things are going to happen and they're going to be really grim.
Yeah.
But the only way I know that I'm going to be able to cope with all of that is to retain a sense of humour and to go to the dark places, really to go to the dark places and try and find some comfort when I get there, which is where you come in.
But we've always had that type of gallows humour though, haven't we? And nothing's really off limits.
No.
And we are quite like, inappropriate at times as well with what we say. And I
like
do
Ricky
wonder.
Gervais.
Yeah, a little bit. Because I think to myself, God, if anybody else ever heard us saying that, they'd think we were awful.
So that's why we're now trying to do a podcast that people will listen to so they can now hear what actually goes on in our sick heads.
But to know that actually we're good people. but we do have kind of sometimes a sick sense of humour. And I think that is to get us through life, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And that will see us through.
So let's bring us to kind of now-ish then.
Yep.
I wasn't planning on doing this podcast tonight because, you know, I do actually have a life and other things to do, contrary to the belief of you over the last week, because I haven't left your side.
Good.
But I hadn't realised until you said to me, yeah, it really needs to be tonight,
yeah,
that we've got the appointment. Well, you've got the appointment in the morning.
Yes, I got a phone call this afternoon from the hospital to say that they have booked me in for my results appointment tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the morning, for which I am incredibly grateful.
I mean, that's super quick. I was in shock when you told me because yes. I had switched my switch in my head yeah. to only come back on maybe at the end of this week, beginning of next. So yeah. it was a bit of shock to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was also a shock to me because I think I've been trying to manage my own expectations for it to be, fingers crossed, by Friday this yeah. week. I didn't want to go through another weekend not knowing, but I think I was more than prepared to, having read an article in the Sunday Times, or it was a Saturday, about, you know, how stretched the NHS is, and the chief cancer surgeon was saying, don't worry though, we're still on top of this area.
It seems like they're blooming well off.
They actually are. Yeah. And I've always had faith in the NHS, and yet again, they seem to be delivering for me. So I'm immediately grateful to the pathology people that have spent the weekend potentially working on what I've got to figure out what
Amazing.
It is. And I know that I'm incredibly scared about what they're going to say to me tomorrow morning, but knowing will be better than where I am now, because 100%. I cannot tell you how isolating it is. You know, if I didn't have you, if I didn't have my family around me, it would just be horrific. So my immediate feelings are for people that don't have that support, because this period is horrendous.
Oh, God, the week has lasted. It's been so long. Yeah. Every day has been
48
a
hours,
nightmare. Yeah, it has felt like that. Okay, so the intention then, we get the results and we face what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And that's all we can do.
That is all we can do. By the time I get there tomorrow, the team of people that decide what will happen with my treatment will have met. They will have already done it by now. And there'll be a path and there'll be a plan.
You like a path, you like a plan.
You do like a path and a plan.
And
yeah.
so this is going to work. We're getting there.
And that's it. Episode one done. Wow. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks a million to Heather for helping me get my thoughts and some very difficult feelings down into a journal, I suppose. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, then please hit the subscribe button. That way you'll know whenever there is a new episode released. And if you've really, really enjoyed it, then please tell your friends. In the meantime, you can follow my journey on Twitter and Instagram. Just search for the handle Breast is History, and please, please start sharing your stories with me over there. And hopefully, when I see you the next time, we'll have some really good news to celebrate.